fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. Great to be back on the air. I took about a month or so off as far as podcasting went. I didn't talk about anything football or baseball related other than on Twitter and Facebook. But now we're back. We've done a multiple of programs already this week, and this one is going to be a baseball one. This is a podcast to be named later, but this is going to be your fantasy fix for the week. We love to provide the closer report as well as the waiver wire report, and I thought, why not try to get a couple of my buddies from rotoexperts.com to provide about 20 minutes apiece of a little bit of fantasy baseball perspective, but also specifically what they specialize in, which is the closer report and the waiver wire report. And we're going to be doing that with George Kurt. Let's try this again. Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Mitchell, your host here of a podcast to be named later. Hopefully, you heard the beginning of the program, which was that we're going to be talking fantasy baseball today here on the program. We're going to have George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com talking about the closer report, and we're going to have Brandon C. Williams, also from rotoexperts.com, providing his waiver wire report for the week. And everybody likes a little bit of their fantasy fix. We're going to do the best we can to get through this program quickly with as few technical difficulties as possible. We obviously had a little bit of a glitch already, but hopefully we'll be able to get past that. Let me welcome George Kurtz back into the program. We've done a lot of podcasts together, George. It's been a long time since we've talked. You've got great things going on over at rotoexperts.com, as well as the Fantasy Sports Television and Radio Networks. How's everything going on with you? How's the family? I see comments on Facebook from time to time. Looks like you're doing pretty well, but let me ask you directly, are you doing well? How's everything going? And you don't have to admit it, but I do know that you missed me.
I actually do miss you, Chris. It was always fun talking baseball, football with you. Family's doing well. You know, nothing's changed. I do live with five women, so I guess my life is kind of a contradiction. You know, I was a big sports guy. I have my man room here, you know, as Scott Engel and Matt Mumwood. They got like a tease. We have the palatial estate here. Yet I live with five women. Go figure. But everything's well. No complaints. Baseball season. Weather's warming up. All is good.
I get a little bit of a perspective about that because my brother actually lives with three women and a female dog. So not quite the degree that you're living with five, but he's got three as well as a female dog. So I get a sense of what
I'm
it's like to, for him. Yo, your dog didn't say you have another woman? You have like six now?
Yes, I'm dog sitting until the weekend. My mom's in Vegas. Mom's in Vegas. I'm here. Go figure. So yes, I am dog sitting a little, I don't know what it is, I think it's a poodle, some kind of poodle. It doesn't shed, though, so whatever that is, I don't know.
Well, that's a benefit. My dog's awesome. Cody is the sidekick of this program, but he does shed. That's the one downside about him is he sheds all over the place. It's ridiculous. One time I took him to be groomed after I hadn't taken him to be groomed for like 6 or 7 months. I was just didn't do it. And there was so much hair that they got off of him that literally you couldn't see him. It was like a snow pile of hair. It was obnoxious. But I'll take it as a compliment when you said, I actually did miss you. Anyone who knows me knows that that sentiment actually is true. You got to throw that. I actually did surprisingly miss you. That's not an uncommon phrase that I get. But let's start talking a little bit of sports. And we are going to be talking the closer report in fantasy baseball here for about 20 minutes. But I got to ask you one question because it's irking me a little bit. You do a lot over at the network. I mean, you are the utility Ben Zobrist, move all over the diamond kind of person. So you cover hockey, you cover fall, you do radio, you do television even, and obviously you do fantasy baseball. And this Chicago Bears thing going on right now is really bothering me. So I just got to ask you, and you follow the NFL as well, obviously, not just a fantasy person. The Bears are just getting lambasted for moving up from number 3 to number 2 in the draft. And I don't have a problem with criticizing them. If you want to argue that they're not very good poker players, that GM Pace just got completely and totally out-pokered by John Lynch, to move up from 3 to 2 and to pay the price that he paid, essentially what you're saying is John Lynch convinced him that either the 49ers were going to take Mitch Trubisky or there was another team that wanted to trade up and was going to take Trubisky. That's kind of the sell job, the Donald Trump that Lynch had to do And obviously he did a very good job doing that. So if you want to criticize the Bears and their front office for being bad poker players, I have absolutely no problem with that. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that they really got played in that respect. But if the Bears believe in Trubisky, if they believe that he's the type of quarterback and get them to the Super Bowl, and that he's the guy that they absolutely wanted in this draft, and that they didn't want to settle for anybody else, it was absolutely Trubisky.
Did we lose you again, Chris?
All right, George, sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties. I think you probably heard – how much of my comment did you – essentially what I was saying was if the Bears wanted Trubisky, they had to do what they had to do to get him. And – yet they're getting blasted, and I saw on, I think it was a Yahoo article the other day, that basically the question was this the biggest draft flub in the history of the draft? Do you think the criticism of the Bears, maybe it's fair, like I said before, but should they be getting just completely and totally blasted the way that they are?
Well, I think the first question I might ask is this. Would they be getting blasted like they are if they didn't already sign Mike Glennon? You know, is that the problem we have here? You know, you sign Mike Glennon in free agency, so he looks like your quarterback of the future, and then you go ahead and you give away picks 3, 67, 111, and a third-round pick in next year's draft to move up one spot. What you said earlier in the in your little intro there was correct. John Lynch must have convinced Chicago that either the 49ers are going to take Trubisky, which is never going to happen, but more than likely that another team was trading up and they had offered this, and you have to beat this offer to move up. That had to be what happened. Now, that being said, you know, we vilify the trade now, and so have I. You know, I think it was a horrible movie. To move up one spot to give up for, you know, three – this is the 3 years is fine, but to give up the other three picks, I think that's crazy. I wouldn't have done that. But we'll say it again in the NFL. The NFL is a quarterback-driven league. If you don't have a quarterback, you cannot compete. So if it ends up being, you know, 3 years now, Trubisky is the man. He is a, you know, Chicago's quarterback of the future the next 10 years, then this trade is fine. Because you got to do what you got to do to get a quarterback in this league, or else you're nothing. If it ends up being he's not, and he's a bust, and this will go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history. If it ends up being where Glennon is the man, and Trubisky never even gets a shot, then that, and once again, bad scouting on your part. I think what everybody wants to know is, why did you sign Glennon? It wasn't like you're shocked that you had the number 3 overall pick here. Why would you sign Glennon if you had all along you knew you were going to trade up to take Trubisky? That's where I think the disconnect is here. Yeah, why'd you do both? Why did you feel the need there? Are you just playing the odds? Odds are one of them will work out. Now we got both. Yeah, I sort of get that too. I think we always rush to judge after the draft. You know, we want to criticize, we want to praise, whatever it might be. This is one where we're going to have to truly wait 2, 3, 4 years before we really find out if it was a horrible trade or one that's going to pay off to Chicago.
Yeah, I just they really just get totally lambasted for this. And again, I agree. I wouldn't have paid that. I would not. I didn't think any of the quarterbacks really justified a top 15 pick. So I wouldn't have obviously paid that even. I would have moved back and still not taken the quarterback. So from that perspective, I agree that Trubisky was not a pick that I was in favor of. But I just it's not like the criticism that I'm hearing, and I'm sure there is some of this as well. But the premise is that they were just idiotic, that it was a no-brainer, that there was absolutely no way they had to move up to number 2. And I don't think that that's fair. That's really the essence of my problem, why I don't quite understand just the complete and total lambasting that they're taking, is that it's not totally beyond the realm of possibility that someone wanted to move up to number 2 and take him. There were thoughts, and Cleveland has said this, and this is probably just PR, but Cleveland had said that they were really close to possibly taking Trubisky with the first pick. Now, again, that may just be a lot of talk, and it may be all bull, but it is still what it is. It's not totally outlandish to think that somebody really liked Trubisky and would have moved. Again, if this was Andrew Luck, if Andrew Luck was available at number 2, nobody would be criticizing the Bears at all, right? So, and yet the premise, the basis of most of the arguments that I'm hearing at least, is not that Trubisky's a terrible player, and it was an absolutely moronic move from that perspective. Like, you hear about the Jets and Hackenberg taking him in the second round last year. Everyone is saying, what in the heck were you doing? This guy's not even an NFL player. And they're just looking at that player and saying, this guy just doesn't have the skill set to even be drafted in the second round. If people were saying that Trubisky should have been an eighth rounder or something, or like when the Oakland Raiders year after year take speed guys like Hayward Bay in the first round purely because they run a 4-2-5, you know, I'm not hearing that kind of criticism, though. Again, you are hearing people say that, I don't know if I love Trubisky or not, but to me, that should be the premise of the argument, not that they just, you know, it's harsh. I just think I agree with the criticism. I just don't believe that it should be as harsh as it's been. It really has been pretty brutal.
And listen, it's some of it's deservedly so. Because I got to tell you, if I'm Chicago, I'm not paying that price to move up one spot. I'll call San Francisco's bluff, see if they do want to trade out of that. Because remember, what made this trade great for San Fran is they knew who Chicago was going to take, and they were still going to get the player they wanted all along. So they had nothing to lose here. I mean, nothing to lose. I would have called their bluff, because if they would have made a trade with another team, then maybe they don't get Solomon Thomas. You know, maybe they don't get the player they truly coveted there and they really wanted. You know, they probably wouldn't have gotten as much. Maybe they would have gotten more if they had to move down further. We don't know who this other team was. I don't think it was Cleveland. It could very well have been, but I don't think it was Cleveland that wanted to move up from 12 to 2. But Cleveland did make some – they were never going to take Trubisky first overall. That was a smokescreen. Yeah, but it did let teams know that they were interested in moving up. And I think they were, but not from the 12 to 2, probably more of a 12 to 6 range. I think they were going to maybe trade with the Jets, who have rumored all along to trade down, because let's face it, the Jets have a lot of holes. You know, the Jets are pretty much in the suck for Sam. We all know they're going for the quarterback out of USC next season, who is expected to be sort of the next Andrew Luck, the next big thing. Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Kaiser – I know I looked at a quarterback or two here. None of these guys overall was even considered a top 25 player coming into this draft. Quarterbacks just get moved up because you can't win without one. And let's face it, everyone's seeing what Dak Prescott did with Dallas last year. Russell Wilson being a third, fourth round pick as well. Even Tom Brady was a sixth round pick. Teams are now starting to say, hey, we got to move up and take some chances. Even if these guys aren't the best overall player, they aren't an Andrew Luck, a Peyton Manning, the obvious number one pick in the draft. We still have to move up, take some chances. It's just the way the NFL is nowadays. All the rules are geared towards the passing game.
Absolutely. And if people wanted to make jokes about how they really want GM Pace in their poker game, and if they want to comment that the Bears' front office were horrible poker players, you can lambaste them for that as much as you want to. That's fair criticism. And, again, my only problem is that as a philosophical move, I don't think it was all that bad. It was miscalculated. It was an overpay. But not everybody's a great poker player. I'm not a great poker player. So if you want to sucker a couple $100 out of me, invite me over to play. But don't say that I'm a moron and don't know baseball because I can't play poker. I mean, to me, that's where the criticism should be. And that's why I wanted to ask you about it before we talked a little bit of baseball here, is because it does really seem like the dumbest move ever made in the history of the NFL draft. I mean, come on, Mike Mamula, Tony Mandarich. The Raiders have had scores of moronic picks in the first round, all on much more valid grounds, I think, than this. And, again, if you overpay, people don't even care if you overpay if it ends up working out. And if Trubisky works out, then obviously then that'll be a different world altogether. But we're actually planning on talking fantasy baseball here today. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, here on a podcast of your name later. With me is rotoexperts.com fantasy baseball expert George Kurtz. Before we talk about the closer report, which is what he's actually here for, George, let me just get your impressions early on. You must be pretty happy being a Yankee fan, seeing Aaron Judge hit 13 home runs in the first month and 4 days or 3 days here into May. I rank Judge as a top 12 rookie this season. I think it was 12. I believe when I ranked the rookies as far as fantasy contributors, I believe I had Judge at 12. I could be wrong, because he's never been a monster power hitter in the minor leagues. He's always had monster raw power. He hit home runs in the minor leagues, but he had never hit 20 home runs in more than 20 home runs in a minor league season. He hit 23 last year, but four of them were in the majors. So on total, he hit 23 last year, but he had never hit more than 20 in any one minor league season. He's a little bit old for a rookie, not ancient, but he's, what, 24 or 25, and these days rookies are often 21, 22, 23. So I thought he'd be a good player. He definitely has the raw power to hit the homers. But, you know, on pace to break Barry Bonds' record, that's pretty impressive. I don't think Mark McGwire is even afraid of what Judge is going to do as far as getting to 50. But nonetheless, he's already had a fantastic season. What are your impressions about Aaron Judge in general? But what are some of your thoughts about what we've seen in the first month and a couple of days here of the fantasy baseball season?
Well, when it comes to Aaron Judge, of course, as a Yankee fan, I'm thrilled to see him. He's sort of been the anti-Greg Bird, right? We thought Greg Bird was going to be the one who was going to take off, and he pretty much died. I actually wonder how bad that ankle bruise actually is, if that's what we're blaming this on. But as for Judge, I think what you see for Judge, you know, you and I have talked about this many times. Scott Engler and I have talked about this. Baseball is a game of adjustments, you know, and that it will always determine when it comes to a younger player. Pitches will adjust to him. Can he make the adjustments? With Judge, throughout his baseball career, he's almost always struggled at each level. Then he adjusts, he succeeds. I think we've seen this at the Major League Baseball level as well. He struggled last year, struck out an awful lot. And this year, he's learned, hey, if they're going to throw me these curveballs, let's not get the two strikes. Swing earlier in the count. If that's when they're throwing these balls right down Broadway or right where I can handle them, let's do it. And he's made that adjustment. You saw that early on. He wasn't allowing himself to get the two strikes and then have to chase that, you know, the slider that's out of the strike zone, chase that off speed, chase that curve. And he's hitting the ball a mile. He's what the Yankees need in more ways than one. Not only is he helping them win, but now the Yankees have a player to go watch, which they really haven't had since Derek Jeter or since A-Rod when the fans didn't hate him. Someone that you want to go pay to see. You know, I tweeted last night, Chris, you see the home run, and it's 435 feet, and I'm like, oh, that's it? Yeah, because you're waiting for him to hit one out of Yankee Stadium, hit one out, you know, it's just amazing what he can do. That ball, off his bat, he makes any kind of connection, it flies. When he hits the ball in the air, I don't care if it's a pop-out, you think it's going out of the ballpark, because he has that kind of power. You know, he's a monster up there. He truly is. Now, he'll have to make some adjustments. Again, I don't know what pitches he'll do to get him out. Maybe they'll try and go throw the ball. See if he'll chase the high pitch. He'll have to lay off those. But he looks legit right now, which is good to see for Yankee fans. I agree with you. He's not going to hit 71 home runs, 72, 73. Might he hit 35? Wouldn't shock me. Could I see him approaching 40? Yes. I don't think 50 is in the cards either. But for the Yankees, I don't think any of that matters. It's just good to see that he made the adjustments for this season. My overall impression on the baseball season, boy, teams are using this 10-day DL to their advantage, huh? 10-day DL. I mean, it's killing fantasy. I mean, it really is. I know most of my leagues, I have 5-6 guys on the DL. And most of these leagues, I don't have unlimited DL slots, so my bench is just covered with DL guys, or I got to release players. This is why I'm such a big proponent of unlimited DL. I don't like getting screwed twice. But one, I got to release the players to get a full lineup, and then Chris Mitchell picks them up. Yeah, I really dislike that. I don't think it's very fair. But I think that's what we're seeing this season. It's the first thing I think of. So many guys going on. It seems like every night, two more guys go on. You know, now is Stroman going to go on after he has arm tightness last night? You know, Ian Kinsler came out of the game with a tight hamstring, although they rained out the game today. I wonder if that helps him get back in the lineup tomorrow. So that's my first impression. By far, first and foremost, so many guys on the DL.
Thank you. Hello? Rocky, I hear you.
I was just saying.